Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
There aren't any Jasons 12 and under. That's a dead name.
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
How many kids do you hear, hey, Marky, it might be almost to the point of Ruth.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
You love that name so much, you don't even go by it.
On 100.5 ESPN.
If you call me Mark, I like my name. I like my name a lot.
The ESPN Wisconsin app.
Wilde and Tosh.
And ESPN Madison on YouTube.
It's Wilde and Touch, isn't it?
This is Wilde and Tosh, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
I am not going to have all of the additions. The Jason Wilde, we're working through technical difficulty conditions. The Jesse Nelson has some sniffles and is going to miss addition today. And that means Hunter Vaughn is going to be in our Cousin Subs director's chair today. And we'll work to get Jason back of Wilde and Tosh. I don't have all the info. Beaver, it's on in Beaver Dam. We're on in Milwaukee. We're on ESPN. We're on all of these different things. So, I'm Mark Tauscher, and as we wait for Jason, you know, a lot of interesting things kind of came across the desk yesterday. Whether it was Matt LaFleur, whether it was all of the different pundits talking, but there's a couple of things that I want to hit on as we wait for Jason. And anybody getting a little nervous? Any Packer fans getting a little nervous about what everybody... I can't find anybody feeling anything negative about the Green Bay Packers right now. And I got to admit, just like when people are talking real nice about you, sometimes you get a little queasy. I think Jason has joined us now. Jason, is that accurate that you're starting to kind of feel like everybody is on board with what's going on, that the Green Bay Packers are... It almost feels, I think, everybody picked them, except for Nick Foxworth, who lives in D.C. Are we starting to get to that point, and it's only week two?
Yeah, I don't know. And great job, by the way, opening the show. I'm not sure what technical glitch we had. I'm sure Hunter will find a beautiful photo of me to put up on the video stream while we figure that out. I don't know about outside, because, you know, I'm not consuming that as much. I'm reading the other beat writers, but I'm not. You're my connection to get up and unsportsmanlike and where people are talking about the Packers. I can tell you this. That locker room is really excited and really bought in. And I think they felt that way. You could feel it as training camp was winding down. Like, they had a little bit of adversity with a couple of their crucial wide receivers dealing with injuries. Look, and Jaden Reed had a really nice game in the first game for a guy that's playing with a fracture in his foot. There was concern about Jordan Love and what he was dealing with the thumb and the surgery, but you know, he was able to start doing stuff almost immediately with the 7-on-7 stuff. And it just felt like that kind of week between final cuts, even before they actually made the trade for Micah Parsons, there was the buzz. They could all feel that it might happen. And then Micah Parsons, I have to give him a ton of credit. Like, he's really come in and pushed all the right buttons. You know, you and I were talking about this yesterday with what he said about Lucas Van Ness, right? And that connectivity there. And we were talking to Jeff Hafley yesterday, and Jeff Hafley was, you know, so complimentary of not just the production they got from Micah Parsons, but the way he has gone about his business. And he's pushing for more snaps, and he's making a concerted effort to be connected with guys. And to your point, I think he has gone out of his way with Van Ness because Van Ness's snaps were the most affected by his arrival. So I think Micah Parsons has pushed what was already a really good vibe into hyperspeed. Now, they have to go out and keep doing it, right? And that includes against Washington tomorrow night. But they get off to a 2-0 start with the two games they had in 5 days out of the chute. I know fans will be really fired up, but I think the guys in that locker room will be too. And, you know, I'm not saying that Tom Waddle's prediction on our Boldathon is going to turn out to be absolutely positively right, and they're going to start the season 8-0. But you can't go 8-0 if you don't go 2-0 first. And there's a really good vibe in there. And I think there's, you know, Tausha, I when this news broke last night, you know, I thought, what another little, I mean, not little to Christian Watson little, but what another little thing that brings this team a little bit closer together. He is extremely well liked and well respected in that locker room. And for him to get a 1-year extension, $13.25 million, Christian Watson now, if there's been a criticism that I've had of Goody, and I know there's been a few, one of them has been, you know, it doesn't necessarily feel like he always takes care of his guys, right? Well, they took care of Christian Watson yesterday. He doesn't have to now try to rush back so he can earn a contract for next year. And so I think all those things are starting to really align, and that's a reason to be really excited about this team from a fan perspective, because I think the guys in the locker room are that excited. Do you remember a
So,
time during
Jason,
your career?
were you surprised? Because that news kind of came across. I think Schefter broke that last. I don't know what time, but were you surprised that that happened?
I was very surprised that that happened. Now I can tell you this after the fact. I talked to Matt LaFleur in early February about a bunch of different stuff, just kind of on background. And the two things that I took away from that conversation were, one, he really wanted to run a bunch of two tight end sets, but he was really excited about that. Being a crucial piece of their offense. And two, he really wanted to figure out a way to keep Christian Watson, because I think he's one of LaFleur's, truly one of LaFleur's guys. Like, I think, you know, with the issues that they had with Romeo early on in the season and the way Christian, like, took a leadership role with that, with the, I know people have forgotten this, but with the Drew Rosenhaus, Jaden Reed defining his role after the wide receiver selection of Matthew Golden, you know, I really think that LaFleur appreciates not only the player that Watson is, with the fact that he can line up in every wide receiver spot, the fact that he is a unicorn in terms of his skill set, all those things. But he also really appreciates how he goes about his business. Like, I think the time, Tausch, I think the players that LaFleur really wants, I think he's on board with Goody's young player approach now. I think he really wants those types of guys in the locker room.
because they, for one, will listen to him, right? As opposed to maybe Aaron Rodgers for a portion of their time together. But two, if he can get guys that are young but mature in their behavior, I think that's the sweet spot. And I think Christian Watson fits that role to a T.
Yeah, I love this move for both sides. I think it's one of the rare times that you see Goody being proactive with someone that's not a, healthy, prime, in their prime, Zach Tom. This is a move I think that you see, and I know Jesse's out today, but Jesse kind of poo-pooing, and I think a lot of fans down on Christian Watson. But when Christian Watson is healthy, and I know he's not as healthy as everybody wishes. Trust me, I'm sure he feels the same way. But he is a difference maker when he's out there. And now you're getting him at a heavy discount for really a season and a half. And then you can kind of figure out, you'll know what you have with Matthew Golden. You're going to have a general idea who else you're keeping. But I do think, and this is something to watch, and I don't know where Romeo Dobbs is at, but I know obviously what happened last season. And this, in essence, I think says that Romeo Dobbs, the chances of him re-signing, I thought were light anyways. I think the chances of Romeo Dobbs staying with this team past this season had just got a lot slimmer. And the chances that he may be traded, I still don't think he'll be traded this year unless, but then all of a sudden those reports came out last night that two or three teams have offers on the table. I will be curious watching Romeo Dobbs the next 3 or 4 weeks and how he handles this. Hopefully, he is better prepared to handle some probably not great news on his perspective that his buddy got this extension and that he didn't. And maybe I'll be wrong on that, but that's the vibe that you get when you see a move like this.
Well, I think, first of all, I think that's an extremely astute point, and I'm not just saying that because I'm not looking at you. It's the truth. But I would also add this. I think, and you've talked about this so many times, right? And we always talk about Eleanor's, feel your.
I think he was saying feel your feelings.
Yeah,
Let's
he
do
was.
this. Let's see if we can get Jason connected in a little bit better way. I'll tell you, if you need to get connected with someone to get new windows and doors, oh baby, we got your team, and that is the team at Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. And when a customer chooses Pella, one of the most important things to them is honoring that trust and commitment. We saw the Packers put some trust and commitment that Christian Watson's going to get healthy and become a really regain that form that we love when he's healthy. A lot of customers, they might have apprehensions about inviting someone out to their home, but when you see the experience and professionalism, you can trust them with bringing your project to life. Their vision is to be the company that people want to do business with. Order by the end of the month, get 0% interest for up to 5 years. Visit PellaWI.com today. We'll hopefully get Jason back here. We got Brian Bulaga coming up at 9:30. Plenty of other stuff. The Christian Watson part of this is really interesting. I think it's awesome. But I also want to kind of dig into what that means to the rest of the receiving core and where their minds are at. We'll try to get Jason back, and we'll do that next on Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
Ready for Brian Bulaga on Wilde and Tausch.
I'm not switching my internet providers, but I'm not happy with my internet provider right now. I can tell you that.
Yeah, what's going on over there?
See if we can't get that straightened out.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah, I think
I like talking.
I think our internet is
out. I ain't Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, I know we are. But where are you right now?
Well, he's dead. So I also, we have the basement studio, but if you're relying, what's so funny?
You love me. You love the fact that I am a basement dweller, kind of like the YouTube.
Howard Stern. These guys. I don't know how these guys do their show, but like, can you imagine doing 3 hours by yourself?
No. I don't want to talk to myself that much. I thought you did great, for the record. I thought you danced as quickly as you could and did a great job.
The Watson stuff, I think, is really interesting. And I think when he comes back, you know, I'm going to be really intrigued how that's going to look. But it's just that you get that feeling when everybody – it almost feels a consensus that, Green Bay. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it when there's at least a few. Like, you can't watch Sunday and not feel really good about where this team is. But now I'm starting to, it's one game. You know, where's that balance as a fan? Like, I'm trying to piece that together because I can't hone in the fact that I think this defense has got a chance to be incredibly special, and within that, that means big things. But I also want to – it's Wednesday now. Play tomorrow. I want to make sure there's an edge. You always are nervous when things are too good that it's too good to be true. And I'm kind of at that point, and it's only week two. So that's kind of where I'm at. There's too many flowers being thrown. O-linemen don't like flowers being thrown. We like it when you're kind of rough and a little bit tougher on us. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm torn on this whole, everybody's feeling good about what's going on deal.
So one of the things I want to get to today, if I'm able to stay on the show, was something that we talked about with Jeff Hafley yesterday. And, you know, he's always preached 11 hats to the ball, right? You hear that all the time, and he's not the only one who does it. But he said he'd never seen it as good as it was against the Lions. And Jesse, I think, had that crazy stat that Jahmyr Gibbs caught 10 passes for 31 yards, and it was the fewest yards on 10 receptions in NFL history. Okay, your stat. Where'd you get that from, Jesse?
Schefter. No, I stole it.
Where'd you get
Schefter.
That? Oh, okay. All right.
Get up.
Okay. All right. But I think that bears out what Jeff Hafley said. On top of that, one of the things that we heard a lot about yesterday from LaFleur and Steno was the fact that the running backs were picking up blitzes at a level that they had never seen before. And Tosh, my question for you is, those are the kind of effort and behind the statistics type stuff that when your team is doing that, isn't that an encouraging sign that they're bought in? Because those two things are not stuff we normally talk about. And the fact that those were so noticeable when I broke down the film and that they were talked about so much, I thought was really telling to me. Is that a fair view, or am I putting too much into that?
Maybe a little bit, but I think what you're saying is you find your role. And if you can get players to accept and flourish within their role, and, you know, just looking back at, you know, seeing some of the guys that came back from the Super Bowl team, and Brandon Jackson is one guy who never got a ton of playing time and is never a featured back. But, boy, he would come in on third down, and I can still remember the coaches talking about he had tight hands, and they felt great about him being one of those guys that would pick up blitzes. And when you started talking about that, that's finding a role. Even though I've never met an NFL player that doesn't want to start, shine, and get paid big bucks, eventually you kind of start finding out, this is how I'm going to make a career in this league. And when you get guys that buy in, and it's harder to do with younger players, that is one of the challenges that Goody has with how he builds rosters, is you have a lot of young players that want to shine. And you have to mix and match that with guys that will fulfill those roles and that are okay with it because they understand that's how they make a living. And then those young guys start seeing that, and you start figuring it out. But chasing to the ball and 11 hats, that needs to be the norm. I think that's where the great defensive coordinators have and everything else have gotten that to be – coaches, you know, and I don't know if it was a Chileism or if it was a different coach, but you always heard, I don't want to coach effort. Coaching should be technique. It should be scheme. It should be, you know, adjustments. But if you have to coach effort, you're coaching the wrong group. And if that's the case, and that was not the case on Sunday, there will be some games that you will not see guys flying around. And people say you came out flat. That's, I'm telling you right now, you hope that that's not the case, you'll find that it will be. But with everything and with Micah and the home crowd and the excitement, if you didn't have it then, when would you? Uh-huh. Now let's see if you go into a sleepy Cleveland in a week. If then you have that and you see it, then you're now seeing that this is going to be the standard. And that's why Mike Tomlin always says the standard is the standard. Well, you want to live up to that standard as much as you can, knowing you're probably not going to get there every week, but you can get as close to it as you can. And I think the nice part is Sunday, the first game, really set a high bar for what that standard needs to look like.
All right, before we get to Brian Bulaga, and we lost me as I was talking about this, as I quoted the great American orator Eleanor Tauscher, feel your feelings. I thought you made a really good point about Romeo Dobbs. I feel like he had a fairly clear idea of what this season needed to look like for him. And that was, no matter what happens, no matter what your feelings are, you can make yourself a hell of a lot of money, probably from someone other than the Green Bay Packers, if you ball out. And I still think that that's the case, right? I mean, he had two big time plays. He led them in receiving yardage. He only caught two balls, but one went for 20 yards and one went for 48. He is a good player. Now, is he a number one? No, I have never believed that. He is a number two type wide receiver. But in the NFL, to have a very successful offense, you need a really good number two receiver, right? A guy that on third and seven you can trust. And I think Jordan Love feels that way, and I think Matt LaFleur feels that way. So I agree with you that the news yesterday, which I'm sure Christian Watson, being Christian Watson, tipped him off that it was coming, so he wasn't blindsided by it. But I don't think that it changes anything, because I don't think he was going to – I don't think he had his hopes up of getting a lengthy extension from the Packers anyway. I'm assuming – remember when we had Micah Hyde on and he told us that toward the end of the – what was it, the 16 season that would have been his last year?
That Evan Williams was a clone of his? I do remember that, yeah.
No, when he said that they told him with six games left in the year they weren't re-signing him. I'm guessing – that maybe Romeo Dobbs in a different way was told something similar to that. So make the most of this year and you can really do good for yourself and for your family. So I don't think he was surprised by this. At the same time, I do wonder how he will handle that news too, because I do think it's a very legitimate question by you.
Do you think, and I know there's injuries, but your bold prediction for Boldathon, is it more likely to happen now that this happened?
Maybe slightly. I mean, again, you said injuries. Like, right now, they got a lot of cooks in the kitchen. But, you know, sometimes you spill a giant pot of marinara sauce all over the floor and you got to get rid of that guy. And then you get somebody else who, you know, burns their hand on a hot griddle and they're sidelined from the kitchen for a while. This isn't a great analogy, but I don't think they want to move him as long as there's no sort of issues that come along with having him, if that makes sense. And I don't think, look, I've been critical of him, and I don't apologize for that, but I think he knows the score now. I think he knows he's got a strike against him for what happened last year, whether that's fair or not, and that's how the NFL works. And I think he's looking at it as, all right, whatever happens, I have got to roll with it. My conversations with him, I don't know if you remember, but he's very even-keeled. My conversations with him have been, he has been even more reserved than previously. I think he's very much in the mode of, I am going to be all business. I'm not going to give the media anything at all. And I'm going to go out there, play my game, and then let the chips fall. And if that means I get traded at the trade deadline, fine. If that means I finish with 750 yards. I was talking to Josh Jacobs about this yesterday, because he said Romeo is more vocal than he is around us, which I thought was interesting. And then I said, I asked him about all these guys that they've got in the wide receiver group. I said, your captaincy was the least surprising selection of anyone to me. And I wondered if that was something he felt like he needed to monitor, the wide receivers. And because it's all great that they won on Sunday and the most receptions by anyone was Jaden Reed with 3. And a bunch of guys had 2, and then a bunch of other guys had 1. 10 different guys having at least 1 catch. And I said, is that sustainable? Like, you guys are going to say that everybody's happy with that, but there are guys striving for contracts, and they do care about targets, and they do care about their stats. And he said, well, absolutely they do. And he said, it is something that we have to watch. But he said, for right now, as long as we're winning, it's not a problem. But what are you going to do? And I thought this was the point. Like, he said, look, guys in this league now, with the way the numbers have gone for wide receivers, and I don't think he was being bitter as a running back, but maybe a little bit. Guys that get 750 or 800 yards in a season are getting paid a ridiculous amount of money, he said. And I think he's right. So there's a lot for Romeo to play for. So even if he's upset, he has to be smart about how he handles it. We want to get to Brian Bulaga somewhat on time. It looks like maybe my internet is reconnected, but I'm not trusting it just yet. So, Tausch, I know you trust Tito's when it comes to your favorite infusions and muddles and every other drink you enjoy except pickle juice.
I love 3 things. You know I love a lot of things, but 3 things. Football, firing up the grill, and a solid cocktail. And whether it's a Sunday game, a Saturday game, or a Thursday night game, Tito's Handmade Vodka is my go-to. Made in Austin, Texas, at the first legal distillery in the state, Tito's is 6-time distilled for a clean, smooth finish, and it goes great with everything. Put it with a Gatorade. Put it with pickle juice. Make a transfusion. Make a Bloody Mary. Just make sure that it is always Tito's in your glass. And Tito's make a great drink, and they also give back in a big way, partnering with nonprofits and doing real good out in the communities across the country, especially for our 4-legged friends. So next time you're raising a glass, make sure it's Tito's Handmade Vodka that is in it, crafted to be savored responsibly.
Given their love of dogs and your love of Tito's, when are we any closer to Tito the Tauscher family dog?
We are not.
Okay, that was the answer. We are close to talking to Brian Bulaga. He joins us next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
Tausch on 100.5 ESPN is brought to you by Everlight Solar. Save money, save the planet. Everlight Solar.
Got some famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in. But when I go back,
knock on wood. I think we are past our technical issues at Casa de Wildy, and just in time so I get to enjoy one of my favorite things that we do throughout the week, our time with Brian Bulaga on Wildy and Tausch. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Better now. Tausch was awesome for the first segment when I ran into some technical problems, so thank you for his service. But now I think we're up to full speed and full strength, so it's great to have you. I would have brought this up had I been able to be on the program early. I want to talk to you about the offensive line. I want to get to that, but before I do, I was mentioning this to Tausch. The Micah Parsons effect is real, and I'm really intrigued by the way it's connecting guys on that team. And I'm curious if you ever remember, I mean, I know he was older, but maybe when Peppers showed up or something, do you remember anything that really got you guys going in terms of connectivity to each other?
I don't recall like this, or I guess the way this is having that impact. Maybe it was never like that because, you know, as a team, I always thought like we already had that guy in the building and that guy played quarterback. You know what I'm saying? Like, so everyone already felt like that guy was in the building and we could already, you know, you could play off of that already, right? Like, if you did what you needed to do, that guy created the opportunities for everyone, right? Like, I mean, that's kind of what Micah Parsons does for everyone on that defense. And, you know, and obviously offensively, you know, the defense does their job. It puts the offense in very good positions that they can go do their job, right? So we felt like that, you know, offensively. I think what he's doing for them defensively, right? I mean, whether it's placebo effect, I don't think it's placebo effect. I think it's very clear if you look at the tape what he does for them defensively. He creates a lot of good situations for guys. He just does. He puts guys in a lot of really good positions, a lot of one-on-one positions that they haven't seen, or maybe they've been in those situations, but for some reason they think that they're not in those positions because, you know, they in some way they don't feel like they're, you know, getting doubled, or there's the center's sliding to me, or there's a tight end over here, so I'm really not in a one-on-one. No, you're in a one-on-one situation because number one is getting double teamed. Like, that's the guy that's getting double teamed. He just is. Like, so don't think you're getting double teamed. He's getting double teamed. Or chipped or thumped, or the back's releasing over there, or no matter what, everything's happening, all the action's going to number one. So, like, if you're away from him or whatever, it's up to you to go win, and guys did that, right? Like, you saw that consistently. And then on the back end, like, the DBs understand it, right? He's going to create that time clock in quarterbacks' heads that is just a click early. Like, the quarterbacks feel like, if I hold this for a half second longer, Parsons is going to be there and I'm going to get sacked. And what do I do? Like, do I hold on to it for that half second longer, or do I take the risk and get rid of it? And then when, you know, you take the risk and get rid of it, DBs can jump those routes. And we saw them doing that. And like, that is what Halfley's defense is all about. That is the four-man rush. That was what the Seahawks did so well. That is like what made like, this defense, when it was, you know, deployed so well in Seattle that I remember playing, like, that's what made them so good, is that, like, the pass rush made that secondary. I don't know, they had great players in the secondary, but when you knew the pass rush was going to get home, those DBs can be aggressive, and that's what we're going to see here going forward, because if LVN and Gary and Parsons and all these guys, you know, start getting home, very quickly, these DBs can start being more and more aggressive.
So, Blue, when you watched it on Sunday and you saw the energy and the juice, what did you make? The Parsons effect is real, but is this something that now you can say, and I said this on the postgame show, been a long time. I asked Jason, he didn't have an answer, that this is going to be a defensive-led football team. Agree, disagree.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing for certain, and it's going to be a team that can always rely on that game in and game out, right? Like, I mean, the offense can have a bad game or a so-so game, and that part of the football is always going to be there. It's always going to so much form that it is. Now, you know, there's going to be times where defense can get up one more than 20.
There we go.
I wasn't sure if that.
Oh, you were. Yeah. No, you were super choppy. Yeah, we couldn't hear you. So,
and all right, continue. I just assumed it was me.
What's going on with the
Yeah, we got some internet stuff.
We're working on it here. We're working on it.
We'll get it figured out. Jesse, I think Jesse knew this was happening, and he's leaving it in Hunter's lap today, which is genius by Jesse. So, Blue, I didn't hear you. Did you say yes, it's a defensive-led team? Because there's no doubt, I think it's going to be hard to move the football effectively, consistently against this group. And
yeah,
we're
yeah,
just so yeah, used to the quarterbacks running the show and being, you know, like you said with Aaron and with Favre, it was that was, hey, they'll bail us out of things. Now it almost feels like, well, you know what, if we have a rough game or if Jordan throws a bad pick, the defense will bail you out. And that feeling hasn't been here from the start of a season. I think in 2010 there was a feeling that the defense would make plays. I know in 2009 we felt like the defense would make plays, but not to this degree. And that's why I said what I said, and I, you know, I feel pretty good about it.
Hell, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. I think when you look at it, they're set up to, like, pretty much what they did to Detroit the entire game, right? Like, make them earn every yard, and if teams are going to go the distance, they're going to have to go and earn every yard, and then eventually this defense stood them up and made them kick a field goal, get three, and give the ball back to the offense. And, like, that's demoralizing on offenses, as you know. Like, you go through these drives, and you go down the field, and you stall out and kick three, right? And then Green Bay gets the ball back, and it's seven real quick. It's like, I mean, you never gain ground. And, like, I think you can rely on this defense week in and week out to continue to perform that way, right? Like, and I'm not saying the offense gets a break, right? I'm not saying, oh, they could take a week off. Like, they don't have to go do their job, and if they don't improve, that's okay. Like, no, they need to continue to improve and you know, get better. But I think you can rely on that side of the ball to continue to put up performances like that, because that wasn't a fluke by any stretch of the imagination. Nope. Like, that's not a fluke. That's not an accident. I saw performances
wasn't a bad
from
offense.
Guys.
That wasn't
no,
a bad
no.
team.
There were performances from guys that, like, I felt was a long time coming. Like, Quay Walker looked phenomenal. Cooper looked phenomenal. Gary and LVN looked, I mean, guys that you're like, okay, when is this going to turn for these guys? And it did. Like, they looked great, right? Like, and listen, I don't know if it's, is it Parsons? Is it second year in the scheme? What is it? I don't know what it is, but finally, like, coming good to, like, what they were drafted for, right? Like, all the potential, all the talk, like, they put it on display. And, like, it was very fun to watch. Like, very fun to watch live and then to watch back, because it looked as good watching back as it did live. Like, that is for sure. Like, that was the fun part about it.
So,
Blue, when you looked back at that, you looked at the tape, and we'll get to O-line too, but what really stood out? I mean, obviously the pass rush, but you said Quay Walker. I haven't heard a ton of that. Everybody's raving about Coop. What did you see from Quay that you loved?
I think they say, I mean, everyone, yeah. I mean, Coop obviously had a bunch of tackles. I think he had like 12 or 13 tackles. I think he led the team, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't look at the finals. I'm not a big stat guy. I know Mike McCarthy taught me that, big stat guy. if you watched Cooper and really watched Cooper the way he was, you know, filling and things like that and flying around, Quay did the same thing. Quay didn't miss gaps. Quay wasn't out of position. He was downhill, physical, filling really well. Like, what Halfley did really good with the scheming of against Detroit, a lot of quick one gap line stunts, right? Like, D line moving one gap and vertical. And the linebackers did really well filling behind the line stunts, right? Like, they did a good job reading downhill filling. And, like, so if you think Quay or Cooper did good, if the other linebacker is out of position, something's going to open up, right? Like, obviously, if only one linebacker's doing his job and the other one isn't, something's opening up. So if you go back and watch Quay, he did just as good. And he was physical as hell, downhill, made a lot of plays, physical at the point of attack, flying around. Like, I thought he played a really good game. Didn't look out of position. Did not look like he, like, sometimes last year, like, and even at times the year before that, looked like he was lost at times. I think that's what people would say. Like, he would kind of be floating in space. He would pick gaps wrong, right? Like, things like that. There was none of that. And, like, this Lions team will make you do that at times, right? Like, they will make you guess wrong, fill the wrong gap, do things like that. Nope, none of that. He was spot on. Like the linebacker play to me was very impressive. All the linebackers, McDuffie, Quay, Coop, they were great. Really good linebacker play. And it showed, right? I mean, when you stop that run game like that, it's the D-line and the linebacker play that was really good. So, like, I mean, obviously, you know, Coop gets his flowers because of all the tackles, but Quay was really good too, man. Like, I gotta give him his credit. Like, guy was really good.
So, Brian, one last thing on defense. I mentioned this to Tausch, and I'm gonna get during the commercial break from our time with Jeff Hafley, because I asked him this flat out. He's talked about getting 11 hats to the ball since he got here, right? Mm-hmm. But he told us yesterday that was the best he's ever seen it. And my hypothesis is that this is a group that, like you mentioned, is in the second year, so they know what they're doing a lot better than they did. But that's one of the ways that the Parsons effect is taking root, right? Because you could, hey, there are people in Dallas that have been critical of him for whatever reasons, but I don't think he has an effort problem from what we have seen so far, right? And so my question to Hafley was, well, what do you attribute that to, that they were that way? Because you've been talking about it since you got here. And that was the thing that made me think that maybe there's something really special going on. And again, only one game in, but to Tausch's point, that this could be a defensive-led team, because when you hear your defensive coordinator talking that way, and when, to your point, what you said about Quay, even though his numbers weren't there and they were giving him a hard time for not catching that interception that he should have had, but you're right, he played like he is starting to look like the guy that they drafted in the first round for a reason. And he was doing that back in December before he hurt his ankle in Seattle, and now he's doing it again through one game. Cooper is flying around and eating up the grass at such a high rate of speed. Parsons is having his effect. LVN and Rashawn Gary are benefiting from number one being on the field. Someone sent me a stat yesterday that on the snaps that Lucas Van Ness, Rashawn Gary, and Micah Parsons were on the field, all three of them together, the Packers allowed a cumulative total of 6 yards in the game. So I just, when you see a defense doing what you saw it doing, and not just, oh, you've got to have 11 hats up at the ball, which every defensive coordinator I'm sure says, did that defense look different to you and more capable of doing what Tausch brought up, the idea of it leading this team?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, to your first point about 11 hats to the ball, I mean, it felt like every time, you know, a running back touched the ball, the first contact was there, and, like, four more guys were there, like, instantly. Like, it was instant. Like, four more guys were at the ball carrier. And if you think to last year, we'll just go back to a Lions game, right? Like, I'll just think of a Lions game. Like, I think back to, like, when Gibbs would touch the ball last year, he'd break a tackle, and then it'd be, like, another 3-4 yards he would gain until another guy would come, right? Like, and that's my thought. And I think to this game, he would, the first contact he'd get made, he would maybe break that tackle. By the time he lifted his head, three more guys were there just laying the hammer to him. So, like, it was a completely different, like, looking defense. And the speed, like, that was the noticeable thing. Like, they were playing so much faster than the Lions. Uh-huh. Like, and that's the crazy part about it is no one made the Lions look slow last year. Mm-hmm. No one made the Lions look like not physical last year. Green Bay did all those things. They made them look slow.
Blue, they dictated, the defense dictated what the Lions were going to do. Last year, the Lions are dictating. They're running trick plays. They're doing all this stuff. And Green Bay suffocated and said, now we're going to dictate what you can do. And then when you want to throw the ball underneath 10 times, we'll set an all NFL record for giving you the least amount of yards after you catch 10 passes. And that is why I think everybody is so blanking excited about this defense.
All right, Brian, we will get into the offensive line shuffle based on the approximations yesterday. Neither Zach Tom nor Aaron Banks would have practiced. They play tomorrow. We'll get the injury report with designations today. The curly shuffle up front. We will talk about that with Brian Bulaga, our offensive line guru, next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
This is Wildy and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
Got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know I'm here.
Continuing with Brian Bulaga. Well, tough one for Iowa against in-state rival Iowa State on Saturday, huh?
Yeah. Sure was.
Could be a tough one for the Packers offensive line, as well as both Zach Tom and Aaron Banks. So their right tackle and their left guard are in some potential unavailability for a short week. And I don't know if it would be different if they were playing on Sunday, Brian. Take us back in your memory, Banks. You dealt with your share of injuries, not just your ACLs, you and Tausch both in that club, unfortunately, but also other stuff. When you're an offensive lineman dealing with an injury, you are predisposed to, I'm going to play through it. I get it. You guys are the toughest guys in the locker room. How hard is it to try and do that on a Thursday? And what are you expecting from this line? Because we talked about it all off season and throughout training camp. Love the top six. After that, not so sure. How are you kind of looking at this week as they get ready?
Yeah, I mean, turning around on a Thursday is tough, right? And obviously, we don't know the injury. They don't sound good, right? Like, I mean, from everything that has been reported, they don't sound good. It's not like it's something that there's, hey, you know, there's a good chance that they could be okay, right? I mean, there's a 50-50. It sounds more like a 70-30 that they won't be able to go, which is, you know, more in the ballpark that it, you know, a little more serious than, you know, giving it a go, right? Which makes the turnaround time not a good thing for them. And obviously everyone wants to push it and be able to get out there on a short week, but like some things are just tough to do. Even like you said, Jason, even if it's Sunday, it may be difficult, right? Like that's the nature of this thing. And obviously if it's, you know, Banks is dealing with an ankle and I think what a groin, like, I think it's two things. I don't know. Depending on what type of ankle injury, if it's a high ankle injury, like
how do you think they're looking at it? Because a lot of times you'll think, all right, well, let's rest because then you're going to get 10, 12 days because you don't play again until that following Sunday. But is there also a look at it like, let's just gut through this because we get another 10 days to regroup and play? I think you look at it differently early in the season than you do later in the season. Isn't that kind of the balance of what you're doing? Because if you can't play, you can't play. We all know that. But if it is something that you can, even if you're at 70%, how do you balance those two things?
Yeah, I mean, I always looked at it as like if it's early on, I guess my point of view is the same always. Like if I could gut through it, I would get the extra days on the back end, right? Like if I could push through it, I know I get the extra days because it's the short week, but I could take rest. I guess on the flip side, they may look at it now, it's too early. Let's just take the rest. They get X amount of days. There's no need to push this thing in week two, right? That may be the way they're looking at this thing. If it were maybe week 10 or 11, maybe a different story, right? They may be going, hey, we may need to push this. It's later in the season and we do get extra time. Let's give this thing a run and see if they can do it. And then we know we'll get extra time after this game. So it's going to be interesting to see the mentality of it. But you're right. If they can't go, they can't go. I mean, that's just the simple that's going to be the simple answer. I mean, you know, with hip injuries and ankle injuries, I don't know what the severity of them those are. Right. Like, you don't really know. I think it's very easy to say right now that, hey, well, look who stepped in. I mean, Kennard stepped in. He looked really good. And obviously Jordan Morgan, you know, he's been playing in preseason and he's looked good and all that. And you know, he stepped in the game and he looked fine. Well, we can say that. And they stepped in the game when the game was pretty much wrapped up. It was under control. I mean, I think the Lions at that point essentially, at least for me watching it, the Lions essentially had laid down at that point. I mean, that game was done, at least to my, at least in my opinion, the Lions were done at that point. This is different, right? I mean, you're starting off, this is a fresh ball game, right? And Washington has high expectations. They were an NFC championship game team last year, right? Like they have high expectations for themselves. So it'll be interesting to see if those two guys go in from the start, how this plays out, right? And then obviously if those two guys start, the sixth man then goes to Belton, right? And that's where who's behind Belton. That's where the depth gets tested. Well,
who's going to play if there's who'll play if there's some anything on the inside? And again, I just think Elgton Jenkins has to stay healthy. I think that is going to be critical. Blue, you watch the film. Give us a little taste. Give us a little taste of what you saw.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think guys played well. I really do. I think for the first outing. Well, I'll start like this. I mean, I'll start with the really positives, and I think the pass blocking was just phenomenal. I mean, the pass blocking was so good. It was clean. I mean, there were a couple pressures here and there, which, listen, I mean, the Lions are good, right? I mean, they're a good defense. They got good pass rushers. But overall, the pass blocking was super, super clean. I mean, guys looked strong. They gave a great pocket. I mean, Jordan Love multiple times had time to pump fake, bring the ball down, scan the field again, and deliver strikes, which is just, I mean, that doesn't really happen in the NFL too often against high-quality opponents. So, like, that shows, you know, how good this group can be up front. So I thought they played really well in the pass game. I think in the run game, there's a lot to improve on. I think they left a lot of yardage out there. I mean, I think you look in the second half, Jacobs, got a lot more yardage. I think he had, around 50 in the second half. I think like 9 in the first half, which is just not good enough, obviously. But even in the second half, a lot of yardage left out there from plays. Like, I mean, there were a lot where, like, guys were just not climbing the linebackers or they didn't climb to the right linebacker. It looked like a couple missed assignments and linebackers were running free and things that just a little bit of sloppiness that needs to be corrected, you know, in week one. And that's, you know, you're going to see a little sloppiness in week one and things like that. And two, and I'm not making excuses, but two, the O-line's, you know, and I'm not saying defense, but just in their, you know, looking at the scope of it, Detroit was putting 7 and at times late dropping 8 in there. They were saying, we are not letting Jacobs beat us. That's what they were saying early in that game, right? Like, Green Bay threw them out of that look early. Like, they had to throw them out of that structure early in the game, and they did, obviously, right? Like, Green Bay, they threw the ball very efficiently in the first half. But Detroit, to start that game, it was 7 in the box all day long, right? And Green Bay was having a hard time early on getting things going, and it showed, right? I mean, the run stats were what they were. In the second half, the box got a little bit lighter. Green Bay started to run the ball a little bit better. But there were still things out there that they could have, you know, could have been way more, in my opinion. There could have been way more. I think Jacobs could have had, like, 70, 75 in the second half if the blocking would have been a little bit cleaner. So that'll be something that I'm hoping that gets improved upon in this short week. I don't know if they're able to, right? I mean, maybe just cleaning up some missed assignments and things like that. What was interesting to me, too, which, you know, I didn't expect to see, LaFleur's scheme, a lot of power, a lot of pulling, a lot of, like, you know, things that I mean, we talk about, you know, the zone scheme with LaFleur and this and that and how they full flow. Lots of power, lots of guard pulling, lots of tackle pulling. I mean, just things that it shows how multiple he is with the schemes and how they're able to do, you know, based on opponent, what he's going to pull out of the bag, right? And when you have Steno as the OC and he's obviously, you know, he was with Shanahan in San Francisco, and they do a lot of different things in San Francisco as well. And Shanahan does, but then LaFleur's bread and butter is what he did, obviously, as an OC in Tennessee with that scheme. A lot of different blends, but like starting off the season with a lot of power was it caught me off guard. Obviously, I wasn't really expecting that. But listen, you put that on tape, and teams have to prepare for it. Right? I mean, and that's just what it is. Like you put those things on tape early. And the coordinators have to prepare for it, right? And they have to get ready for those types of runs and formations. And then you do different things off that. And then you build play action off of that. And it's just it's fun to see early on in the season. And I will also say there was a lot of good play action that was built early, right? Under center play action that I liked. I didn't expect to see under center play action. I saw under center play action. So, like, thank you, Matt LaFleur.
Thumb was good. No problems.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, a lot of good stuff.
So, Brian, last thing for you so we can get you out of here. We had some fun at Darian Kennard's expense, right? We talked about his being related to Dolly Parton. We talked about how before Sunday, he had the same number of Super Bowl rings, 3, as NFL game appearances, 3. He had started one game last year in the finale when the Eagles didn't play any of their starters. And now, ding-dong, opportunity is at the door. What did you see? He played 15 snaps, and then they gave Belton the last 3. He's going to be the guy at right tackle. You said earlier that you liked what you saw. The one play that stuck out to me was where he pulled from right tackle to a run off of left tackle. What did you see from him, and should Packers fans be hopeful, nervous, panicky? How should they feel about him starting at right tackle on Sunday or Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, everything I saw, I wouldn't be nervous or panicking. I mean, like he looked comfortable. He looked the part. Obviously, he's a big guy, right? Like he's not like he looks out of place. He looked calm in his when they passed the ball. He looked very calm in his set. Like he didn't look like he was jumping out of there and very nervous to pass block, which is like when you put in backup tackles, that's normally one of the first things I look at to see like, how does he look in his pass set? Like, is he very jumpy and nervous? And like, is he flying out of there? And like, okay, he's oversetting and he's going to get beat inside really quick. And then that starts kind of the snowball effect of then he undersets and he gets beat around the edge. And now here we go. Like now he's guessing what he has to do. No, he looked good. He looked calm. And like, obviously you said he only appeared in 3 games, but he's been around a lot of good players, right? Like he's been around Lane Johnson. He was around a lot of good players in Kansas City. So like he's, you know, like, you know, who used to say, like Campy used to say, like, you got to learn through osmosis. Like that's what he would tell me about Tausch and Cliffy when I was a rookie. You got to learn through osmosis. Just sit there and listen and watch. I'm like, all right, got it. So he got a lot of that, when he was there. So it was, so he looked fine. Like, I think, you know, it'll be how quickly can he and Sean Ryan get on the same page, right? Like you're working together now with a new right guard. I'm not as worried about how Sheed and Morgan will be able to get on the same page. I think, you know, they've been working together, you know, I would say more than not in camp. It's more of how quickly can the right side get together and get their communication down and all those things in a short week when they're not going to be practicing much, right? Like, I mean, today's probably going to be it. It's probably going to be a jog through.
Yep.
And there you go. You're playing
no
tomorrow.
Practices at all.
So, like, yep. Yeah.
All right, Brian. Brian, we appreciate your time as always, buddy. I look forward to talking to you later in the week about this game and how it plays out. Thanks, pal. We appreciate you. Tausch, tell us about Hard Rock Casino before we end the 9 o'clock hour very late.
All right, the Hard Rock Casino Rockford, over 175,000 square feet of gaming and entertainment space, more than 1,300 slots, 50 live table games, a sports book, and a rock shop. They also have a great entertainment venue. You mentioned Dolly Parton. I hope that she gets there someday, but if she doesn't, there's still premium concert and event space. Bradshaw was there. I think Kevin Hart's coming. A lot of big stars, up to 2,000 guests. Hard Rock Casino Rockford, a premier entertainment destination, just off I-90 in Rockford, Illinois, about an hour from the greater Madison area.
The 10 o'clock hour of Wilde and Tausch will start. Technology cooperating in 2 minutes. Stick around.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.